Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I am your host, Kelsey Little. In each episode of this podcast, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives, or who's had their life changed by someone kind. Maggie Vo's family started the Saute Grill food truck 31 years ago and have been feeding the Boston community ever since. When the COVID-19 pandemic struck, they, like many other food establishments, were hit extremely hard. But despite the fact that their beloved decades-old family business is in danger of not surviving this crisis, they have chosen to focus on helping others. Hello from San Diego, California. I'm very excited to be chatting virtually today with one of our GoFundMe Heroes of the Month for April, Maggie Vo. Maggie, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
You're having me.
Absolutely. I just got to mention this up top because it's very cool. You've heard our podcast before. When did you start listening to the show?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I can't remember exactly, but I remember when I started listening to it, there was maybe 20, 30 episodes now, and you guys have gone a long way since then.
Yeah.
So this is just an honor to be here because I actually know this podcast. And then, you know, it's cool to be interviewed for a podcast, but it's extra cool to be interviewed for a podcast that you've heard and admire so much. So I'm just kind of floored by this opportunity, and I'm just enjoying it while I can.
Well, right back at you. It's very cool for me to be talking to someone who listens. We were just talking before we started recording. You're a big fan of Jeff Liu, as am I. He's the Seattle Lunch Debt Dad originally, and now he's pivoted to helping, families get access to food during the coronavirus outbreak. And, you may be a fan of his, but in my mind, you are both heroes on equal level. I'm just so inspired by people like both of you who just take action and help others. So can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So I would love to start out by learning all about you, Maggie. Tell us about you and your life.
I am just someone who works for the business. I mean, this business has been in my family. We started it in 1989, my father and my uncle. And these recipes are my grandmother's. So over the years, we've refined and developed them so they can be healthier. More vegetables, more fresh produce, that sort of thing. But at the heart, they are my grandmother's classic recipes from when she started working on the truck in 1989. And so I came into the business kind of, I don't know, I've been off and on the truck since I was 12.
Wow.
Just hanging around, trying to practice some math with the cashiering,
Yeah.
And since then, I've just moved through doing all sorts of things for the business. I just help out where I can. Right now, I am in charge of trying to pivot our whole business to meet the coronavirus food shortage needs because, in the Boston area, but also all over the country, there's just a massive food shortage. Not only in school lunch and not having that not provided for children right now, but also in people who are losing their jobs. And restaurants that are forced to shut down and downsize.
Yeah, well, so let's maybe back up a little bit. So you work for or with your family business. What is the name of it? And what, tell us all about the business kind of before all this happened.
Yeah, so Saute Grill is a food truck. It used to be known as Gooseberry based on the nicknames of two of the founders, Silly Goose and Papa Bear. And there are my family members, but who shall remain anonymous in case they don't want to be known by those nicknames. But around campus, we're known as Gooseberry or Momo Goose. By campus, I mean MIT campus. We started there in 1981, and we've kind of expanded to four or five trucks, and also one kind of takeout location that's a brick and mortar place.
Nice.
But it's been a joy to be a part of this whole time. I mean, it's been in existence my whole life, and I've been part of food my whole life because of it, but also part of serving the community. I grew up in Boston after I left Vietnam, and I've been able to participate in the truck at every level, from food service to recipe creation to cashiering, accounting. And so I've just been able to see every part of this business and get a true appreciation for its impact. And my dad was saying that this food truck began when my uncle was working at a biochem lab at MIT. He was directing a lab at the Howard Hughes Institute, and his lab mates really loved Vietnamese food when he brought it in for them every now and then. And this is my like home cooked grandma's food sort of thing, his
Like the
mother's.
best kind.
And this was in the 1980s, where Vietnamese food just no one knew about it, right? It wasn't that popular. And now you go everywhere and everyone knows what the word pho is and what the word
Yeah.
banh mi is, right? And that's such a transformation in just the history of our food truck, because all we do is serve Vietnamese food with the occasional touch of Thai food. And it's really heartwarming to know that the food that I grew up loving to eat, because I've had the privilege of eating my grandmother's food since birth, is now something that just a community of students and Bostonians are fans of. And they tell us all the time that it's delicious and healthy, affordable, all these things that just, you know, my grandmother's legacy is really living on. But also, food is something you see the impact of every single day. And
Yeah.
every single meal that you serve, you get that immediate feedback that you're doing something good and something that's helpful to someone else. It's a very human contact that is different than, you know, the other jobs I've held is consulting or working on research, and that's just so removed from the everyday life of the community that I live in. And I miss
Yeah.
that a lot, which is why I came back to work for the food truck.
That's I agree with you so much. My mother is Italian, and I grew up with the notion that like food is love, you know, that's how she, you know, passes on her love or shows her love to other people. And I just think that's so cool that you get to experience that, you know, with your family, but also with your community day in and day out. That's really beautiful.
And the staff itself is the staff is such a tight and cohesive team. I mean, most of the people who are on the staff have been with us since founding. So like
Wow.
our cook has cooked for us for 31 years,
Yeah.
right? And he has never changed, and his family works for us too. I mean, his wife, his sister, it's kind of like a very close-knit literal family of a crew. And there's only 20 of us altogether.
Wow.
But we do the work of like 50 people each day for like 31 years. So I just want, you know, to appreciate, take a moment to appreciate the hard work of the team. You know, because this isn't just about me or even about my family. Our whole team is crazy hardworking. And you know, in the and then if they've been very inspirational to me in the time of this crisis, because I've had people walk up to me and say, our own staff members, and ask us if we would withhold their pay if we need money to afford to pay other people in our
Wow.
company. They're like, you know, I know that this person has a child to feed and I don't have any children. Like, I don't need to be paid for 2 weeks if you need to get food on the table for them.
That is amazing.
And that's the kind of support that we live with all the time in this company. So that more than anything else has really inspired us to push forward to try to find a way to both support our staff and the community at the same time.
I love that so much. That's really incredible. So you are based in Boston. I love Boston. I've been there a few times. How long have you lived there?
I have lived here since I was 8, which means 2003-ish, 4-ish, 2003.
What's your favorite thing about Boston?
I think I'm gonna garner some disagreement from the crowd here, but I think
Do
that
it.
Boston is one of the most proud communities about themselves, like proud of how close they are, proud of their home teams and their sports, but also just
Oh, yeah.
of the kindness that is here. Proud of being a Bostonian. Like I rarely do I hear someone, except maybe New Yorkers, express just how proud they are coming from Boston. And I can really understand that, you know, over all my years working for the business, people are just really incredible. There are many incredible people who eat our truck who, you know, like everything from Nobel laureates to all this stuff, but they also really support each other. There are plenty of times where I've seen someone struggle to pay for a meal because they forgot their credit card and someone behind them just steps up and pays for it. Wow. There have been people who, there's a couple who met in line, and then they got married and they come back every year for their anniversary.
Oh my gosh.
To eat at our food truck. And that's just the sweetest thing. Or there are people who, for example, when it's raining, we had a customer once who brought their umbrella, brought a spare umbrella to the truck saying, you know, if you need someone if someone needs an umbrella, give this to them. And that sort of thing, I think, carries across all of Boston. I mean, everywhere I see in Boston, it's just kindness and caring and a fierce pride about being a Bostonian.
Yeah, I feel that when I'm there, like it's not like in a, you know, us versus them way. It's just right. Like community strength way. And I just feel very electrified when I'm there, and it has a great vibe. It's an awesome city. So Maggie, I think your official title is the Director of Community Outreach at Sauté Grill, which is kind of the parent company, which has the food truck and the brick and mortar location. I was reading about you all and learned that you were the winners of the Boston Food Truck Challenge in 2011 and were Boston's first ever gourmet food truck. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, we were the only food truck on the scene in 1981. So it's
1981.
Been there ever since. That was before the whole food truck craze hit, you know, the Great Food Truck Race TV show. That's just been our bread and butter for 31 years now. It's crazy to say that out loud. 31 years is a very long time when you think about it.
Yeah.
Time flies. And so, yeah, we were the first truck. We were the first truck on the Boston scene that sold food. And then versus, you know, trucks that deliver food. We were the
right.
first ones that had an onboard kitchen and onboard ability to serve hot meals right then and there. And then, yeah, we've been honored with several awards and mentions throughout our history, which we're very proud of. The Boston Food Truck Challenge being one of them, but also several magazines have named us the top food truck in Boston or one of the top food trucks in Boston. And we're very proud of that because that means that we have the support of our community, first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I didn't know about food trucks until, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago or something. So that is
right.
very early to be on the scene, like, innovative at that time. Well, real quick, tell us all about the food, because you and I were chatting about food before we started. We both love food. What are some of the most popular dishes that people come back for again and again?
So our menu has changed so much throughout the years, but there are some staples that we just can't get rid of. Not that we want to, but we've tried doing like seasonal menus and stuff like that. And the moment we shift some items, there's just this huge outcry on social media saying, bring it back. like one of them is our lemongrass grilled chicken. So what we do is it's just like covered in spices and lemongrass and then flame roasted. Flame roasted so it gets this char on the outside. So you get crispy outside of the chicken, a soft, tender meat on the inside. It's dark meat. So it just kind of melts in your mouth.
Yum.
And the way you're supposed to have that is you eat that with rice or vermicelli noodles. Those kind of like thin rice noodles, with a little bit of, we call this the Vietnamese vinaigrette, but it's basically a combination of fish sauce, lemon juice, sugar, spices, chili, a bunch of that stuff. And you drizzle it over the dish with some fresh greenery. And that is a very classic staple dish in Vietnam. It's called Da Nung, and Ga means chicken, and Nung is grilled. And that lemongrass flavor just infuses the whole dish. And it's one of my favorites, especially when you get it piping hot from the truck.
Yeah. Oh, I'm hungry now.
Yes, that's probably the favorite dish right now that we have on the truck. We don't think we've gotten rid of that since. We might not have ever had that off the menu. I think we
Really?
might have tried a few times to change things up, and that was unpopular. So we've kept it ever since.
Nice. God, I gotta try that someday. Well, something very cool about Satay Grill is that every year you sponsor a charity project, which will kind of lead us into what we're here to talk about today. But first of all, how did that become a part of the company's mission?
So, I think the charity project you mean is the meals that we donate to the UN World Food Program, perhaps.
Yeah.
That,
You do that
so
every
it
year,
began,
right?
right, yes. It began as kind of a way to get our food or food in general to reach an audience beyond what we can. And so, we are very lucky to have a very big following of customers, but also a lot of our customers are MIT professors and students, Harvard professors and students, and there's a certain level of privilege or money that comes with that. Not everyone, but certainly not, villages in like Zimbabwe sort of levels.
Yeah.
And so there was this disconnect for us between, we get to serve this community all the time, but there are still people, even back in Vietnam, in my own homeland, that, can barely afford to get rice. And so how do we balance that a bit more? Keep serving our community, but also help our community with all of their wealth and connections, support those who cannot.
Yeah.
Get these sort of things. And so we started donating a small portion of every single meal to the UN World Food Program. I don't exactly know what percentage off the top of my head per meal gets donated. But we're proud to say that just this past year, we set out from January to donate 30,000 meals to the UN Food Program just to celebrate our 30th anniversary. And we hit that in August. So we've just been
Wow.
rolling. To see if we can maybe double it. But we're working really hard to try to make sure that food and equity of access to food is something that can be global, even though
Yeah.
our immediate footprint might just be in the Boston area.
That is, well, congratulations on reaching it that fast, your goal. That's incredible. It's
Thank you so much.
so that's an excellent segue, actually, because in true Satay Grill team fashion, you have kind of taken that same idea and jumped into gear at a time when your community probably needs you the most. You guys have mobilized in this really impressive way in order to help feed those in need in your community during this COVID-19 pandemic. Before we get into the logistics, because it's truly so inspiring what you're doing, I would love to hear about your personal experience throughout this situation. It's been so much to process across the board. What has it been like for you?
Access to testing has been really hard for everybody all over the nation, right? Tests for medical care and stuff like that. So my roommate and I got sick
Oh my
with
gosh.
possible coronavirus symptoms, but because testing is not available, our doctors just said stay home until you really can't breathe anymore, and then go to the hospital
Oh
and
my
see what
gosh.
happens. And so my experience of this has been that the coronavirus is no joke.
Yeah.
And that, at home, I'm very lucky to have roommates who can take care of me, to have a food supply, to have affordable housing, running water, and things like that, which has kept me in comfort as I get sick. But since I've recovered, I haven't been outside my house, and so I've been trying to run all this stuff from a distance because I don't want any sort of exposure of me to all of our food or any of this. And so the moment I felt a little bit of sick. I just have been home ever since. I've been home maybe for 3 weeks now.
Wow.
And it, if nothing else, my experience has, aside from being sick, made it even more urgent for me to make sure that our efforts continue and go off without a hitch, and we try to get the word out and get food out as much as possible, because it's very, I think that the coronavirus time is a time where one's own privileged position is made a lot more salient all the time, because you hear about refugee camps and like inmates in jail and all these situations where this virus is just wiping out whole communities, indigenous tribes who don't have their lands anymore. And we're not able to reach even a little bit of that. We can't even fix most of the problems. But we can certainly help with food however we can. And if nothing else, my own experience of being sick, but also realizing how lucky I am to be sick, but talking to you perfectly fine now, has lit the fire, really, to make sure that this proceeds, you know, fast, hard, and that we try our best. You know, as my dad was saying, he was saying, you know, this business, my dad was saying, this business might not survive. As with all other small businesses, there's capital problems. There are problems supporting staff and supporting, you know, just keeping the lights on in our kitchen and things like that. But then he said, it's our duty to make sure that if we go down, we go down with no regrets, and that we are fighting every step of the way to make sure that at least our food supply, if we have anything in the fridge, it's going out. And so even now, we're not sure if this business will sustain. We're not sure if we'll still be open in a few months, because things are really hard for businesses everywhere. But, you know, I and my dad and the rest of the team, all 20 of us, take it really to heart that we have something we can do now. And basically, we'll do it until we physically can't anymore.
Wow, Maggie, that is, first of all, I'm so glad that you're feeling better. That's so scary. I just got chills from everything you just said. I mean, that's, I mean, you are in an industry that is being hit really hard by this. And this, you know, we just talked about the amazing legacy of your family's company, and it's been around for 31 years, and you are facing the possibility of, you know, maybe not coming through, which is making me want to cry right now, but you're stepping up to help others, even in the face of all this. And that's just, I'm floored by everything you just said.
Thank you.
I would love to talk about, you know, this campaign that you've started to feed others in your community, because it's heroic in my eyes. So tell us all about that.
So this began basically the Friday before our governor declared that everything would shut down. We had some people who were friends with us in the government who basically said that, you know, there's a very high possibility that things will start going on lockdown tomorrow. So I was in the library that day, and I'd overheard someone talking about their worries. I was in the children's room, their worries that as a parent, how are they going to work and feed their children and take care of their children all in one day for whoever knows how long this is going to last. And then it was quite a kind of drastic eye-opener for me to go straight from the library back to our kitchen, where we have this massive walk-in fridge and freezer of meats and rice and vegetables and all this delicious produce. And my dad is like, my dad was sitting there and he said, if we have to close tomorrow, that's it. We can't sell. We can't do anything. All this produce is going to go to waste. There are lots of laws that surround the donation of foods to certain places, just like pure food goods. And we just weren't prepared or equipped to really turn this around tomorrow. So luckily this happened this was announced on a Saturday. And so we had 2 days to figure it out. And by Monday, our campaign was up.
Wow.
Because we just realized that, you know, not only is it going to be the people with children, but it's people like our own staff. If we can't pay them, then they would have to get food somewhere else. But how? If restaurants are closed, grocery stores are full of people and there's lines, and if you can't take public transportation to get to a grocery store because of the contamination risk on public transportation, and you have children, there's just so many factors that prevent people, especially poor people, from getting access to the basic food staples that they need. So I sat around with my team, and well, first of all, I'm very proud to say that we haven't had to lay off anybody.
Wow.
We're trying very hard, and that's largely thanks to a lot of the generosity of other team members who, as I said, have said they don't need to get paid. You know, other people need it more, and we try our best to pay everybody, but sometimes people just refuse money.
Wow.
But in this time, I sat down with the team, and we figured out that this food doesn't have to go to waste. We are very good at takeout. That's basically all we do is fast, healthy, delicious, hot takeout. And so all we need to do is fix our process so that it was maximally sanitized, more than it already was just by food safety standards.
Yeah.
And then we could just continue doing as we did. So while other members of the team worked on logistics, like my dad figuring out, you know, how to get isopropyl alcohol, that's a big question.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, how do we set up things so that 6 feet apart? How do we make our meals to ensure that there's proper sanitation everywhere beyond, like above and beyond the standard that the FDA or USDA asks for, right? My job was to handle actually getting the word out there. My dad doesn't really know that much about social media. He's much better with business and food. And so the GoFundMe was my idea. We put it up, wrote a really fast description, and we had no idea how to run a campaign. We've never run a GoFundMe before. And so we thought, you know what? Let's just start big and ask for $1 million. Because we had the math. We figured out, you know, X amount of money per meal per person. If you donate like $4, you can feed this many people, and there's how many people in Boston, that sort of thing. And we've started figuring out that it's nicer to go by little increments because you have more to celebrate. So we have cut back to then meet goals and then keep moving the goal forward so that we can tell our team we're hitting goalposts.
I like that.
It just helps move the momentum forward and keeps everyone motivated and inspired. So it began on Monday, and it's been running ever since. We didn't really know much about marketing or GoFundMe or anything, and so that was basically on me to figure it out. And basically all we've done is just tweet at news people, get our fans involved, and then try very hard to, through donating meals, tell people who kind of see that happen that there's a way they can help too if they want to assist with us donating these meals.
That's an incredibly like thorough launch strategy, in my opinion. Well, and clearly it's been paying off. You've seen some really amazing support. How have the logistics of this been then? Are there particular groups that you're focusing on delivering meals to? Like, you know, specific types of people that you want to really help during this time?
Yeah, so at first we didn't really know where to focus. There are students, there are, you know, other food workers or other non-essential workers who are out of jobs, there are families, there's all sorts of places where we could make a difference with food, but how do you get the food there and how do you get the word out to them? That was our biggest struggle. So we actually just tried opening the truck where it usually is and just telling fans that it's there. We had this whole system of different signs and contactless meal service where you like go to station one and you put in your order by phone so you don't like, you just text us and we'll know. And then you go to station two and you drop off your credit card, we'll sanitize that. It was a nice. Longer process, but it definitely was more secure. And we also had keywords that you could text to us along with your meal so that you can ask for assistance, like a subsidized meal or a free meal, or you can donate more money to the cause if you wanted. And by text, it reduces the stigma that usually comes with asking for help. No one knows yeah. you ask for anything. No one knows that you are getting something for free or anything. It's just done by text. Only we know, and we don't even know your name. We just know your initials, and that's it. And so that, I think, was a process that I wanted to make sure that whatever we did, we weren't going to draw attention to people who needed help, because there's already so much stigma surrounding asking for help
yeah.
that I didn't want to make it worse in this time of crisis, that you needed to acknowledge the fact that you need something. I just wanted to be simple and easy and for you to be treated like anybody else. So that worked on sunny days sometimes, but you know, it still wasn't enough of the impact that we wanted. And so we started reaching out to just the city, saying, you know, to Boston and Cambridge, how can we help with our expertise to deliver meals to people? We talked to the Greenway, and they're very helpful and wonderful. They haven't charged us any rent for the locations we've had downtown, but also
awesome.
Have been reaching out and staying in touch to generate ideas for how to help the community. So with the help of the Cambridge and Boston City Hall and the Greenway, we basically figured out that there are many coordinated efforts to deliver meals to homeless shelters. So we, for example, just provided 200 meals to Caspar Emergency Service Center, which is a homeless shelter in Cambridge.
That's amazing.
And then we're also just tweeting at hospitals, just saying, we would like to bring you food. Just tell us when and where, and we'll just get it to you. And they've been very responsive at you know, tweeting us back or emailing us back saying, you know, this is how it should be done. So we're trying now to focus on, you know, the frontline healthcare workers, homeless shelters, and ideally, if I can figure out how to decrease our meal requirement numbers, because we are a food truck that works in bulk. Mm-hmm. If I can just decrease that and make it cost effective for us to do, let's say, 20 meals, then we can start doing neighborhoods or things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also where a lot of the needs are. There are plenty of people who aren't homeless or healthcare workers who also need meal support.
Yeah.
But we're also trying to not bite off more than we can chew, because it's very important to us that we just do what we can. And that if we do too much, we'll start failing at the things we're already doing well. There are plenty of people out there who are helping out in their own ways. And that's, I mean, partly that's what your podcast has shown us. And so we are heartened in knowing that, you know, we don't have to fix everything. We don't have to feed everybody. We'll try, but perhaps it's better for us just to do the little bit that we're doing very well.
That, like, That is kind of exactly what I hope people take away from these stories. I'm glad that you said that. And I think it's so, so important for people to think about, especially, I mean, no one ever predicted something like this was going to happen. You know, there are always things happening around the world that kind of call us to get involved. But right now, so many people need support. And I truly believe in my deepest of hearts that everyone can play a role. And like you said, you don't have to fix everything, but just if we all do a little bit, it's going to make so much of a world of difference for
right.
lots of people. Have you had any conversations with the meal recipients or anybody that you've helped so far that have really touched you?
I personally haven't because I've been home making sure I don't get coronavirus on anybody else.
True, very
but
responsible.
But my team has been definitely telling me about how good they feel doing this. I'm not sure if they've personally had conversations with people that we have delivered meals to. They might have, but I haven't had a chance to touch base with them about that. But, you know, we've delivered over 800 meals since the state of emergency began in Cambridge and Boston.
Wow.
And so in that time, we've really been able to deliver to people who are the most hurt, we think, by the coronavirus situation, you know, homeless people, but also maybe other people who work in food service who are laid off or, you know, healthcare workers, because they are just giving their all for us.
Yeah.
And so I've heard from the staff that this is just such a, I've heard from the staff that they're very thankful and excited for a chance to really put all of the expertise that they've learned and built working for us into something that is much larger than just feeding the community every day. And everyone who works for the business already does it because they really believe in, you know, the language of food is love. But this, in our whole history of 31 years, is probably the most salient time where that is a direct translation. Like, what you are doing every day, preparing all these meals, taking these extra precautions to sanitize everything, it doesn't seem like hard work to them. And I am just so thankful and inspired by that, because they are putting in ridiculous hours to make this happen. They wake up and they arrive at the kitchen at like 5 in the morning, and they're cooking and they're laughing and singing. Our kitchen's full of music, and it's just such a joyful place to be. And it's more joyful than I think it's been before the coronavirus, because
wow,
it seems like our whole team is just brought together by this desire to really make an impact. It's kind of, it feels like you've been training your whole life for the marathon, and this is the marathon that you never
yeah.
knew was coming. Like you
yeah.
thought you ran a marathon before, but wait till you do the Ironman, you know? So this is kind of what it feels like. And there's just this high from it all the time. So I haven't heard from our meal. I don't know if to call them customers or not, because they're not really, but I haven't heard from the people who we've given food to, but I do know that at least within our team, you know, spirits are really high and we really believe in the work that we do. And it's been making an impact on our staff. I mean, they're people too. And we're all going through this crazy, wild, kind of anxious, depressive time together. And then to be able to know that these efforts are making an impact on the team as well, so that they can feel like they're doing something, that they're making a difference, that they have meaning in this time, that also means a lot to me.
Well, Maggie, I'm just so, it's been such a joy to talk to you about this. The passion for, you know, this business and your community and just the people around you is just, I know we're talking virtually, but it's just like coming through that my headphones right now on the screen. I can't thank you enough for what you're doing and for just setting such a beautiful example for other people. And I just hope and pray that, you know, Sauté Grill comes out of this on the other end and you can keep going for another 31 years and serving the community. And I hope to be able to eat there myself one day. That's one of my new goals.
Thank you. Just come by and ask for us and we'll be there.
As kind of a closing thought, I would love if you could share maybe something that you've learned throughout this experience that you weren't expecting that you'd like our listeners to take away from our conversation today.
I think this is something that can be learned from almost every single episode in your podcast, but I'm not sure if anyone's ever said it, is that every single person has the capacity for kindness, and that you really should believe in the fact that they will deliver. Not only do they have the capacity for it, but when push comes to shove, most people are kind above and beyond what you would ever expect them to. The outpouring of support and donations for us has been staggering. And, you know, we can see all the amounts and we know some of the names. And there are people on there who are like, you know, there are people on there who we know are struggling and have struggled in the past, who somehow have found it in their wallets to donate like $100 to this cause. And there are other people who reach out and, you know, ask how can they help if they don't have the monetary capacity to do so. But beyond that, just the reactions from our own staff and their own kindness. You know, none of us are wealthy here. This business, like many other small businesses, kind of barely limps along. Food service is a very slim margin sort of business. There are many examples within our own company that I've mentioned of people really being selfless and kind in this time. And, you know, my neighbors, they're wonderful. And there's all sorts of, I just moved to this neighborhood like a week before I got sick.
Wow.
And there's already such wonderful warmth everywhere for, you know, me. I don't even know anybody, but you look on the online, if you look online to all these communities of, you know, mutual aid networks, and our free and for sale groups are all just donating masks and cloth and food and sourdough starter, there's just a lot more kindness than I think the media sometimes portrays, because what is news isn't kindness, right? What is news tends to be the harsher, sadder things. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm very grateful this podcast exists, and I wish more were like it, because you need that equal dosage of good news. I firmly believe that the portion of news out there is way, way more good than it is bad. But only what's newsworthy tends to hit us is what, you know, is negative. And so I just want listeners to take away the fact that there's a lot more kindness in this world than you might see from looking at the news or reading the newspaper. And you just have to kind of look around you, especially now as people just come out of the woodwork in droves to sew masks and make food and work for free and take in people for shelter. There's just so much love everywhere. And I think that a lot of us can be pretty jaded when we don't really take time to observe that. But I just want the listeners to know that I firmly believe that's true. And everything that I've seen in this crisis has just made me believe in that more.
Thank you so much to the wonderful Maggie for coming on our podcast today. To support Sauté Grill's amazing efforts, please visit GoFundMe.com/SautéGrillFeedsBoston. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. If you were inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or review and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. For more inspiring stories just like the one you heard today, please visit the GoFundMe Heroes Hub at GoFundMe.com/heroes, and be sure to subscribe to our mailing list so you can get heartwarming stories delivered straight to your inbox. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe Heroes. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@GoFundMe.com. Special thanks to Gotham Podcast Studio in New York City, where this episode was remotely recorded, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more true stories of good people. Talk to you then!